Good morning, Wisconsin. So let's pour that coffee and talk to some experts about what's going on in Milwaukee, Madison, Washington, and beyond. Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's the Political Power Hour on WTMJ. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Should we talk about the government?
Oh, happy Friday, everybody. And who better to talk about politics with than my guys? Probably the biggest duo tandem on politics in the state of Wisconsin. Is that right, Bill McCosh and Joseph Peck? I think it is.
Those are your words.
Those are your words.
Which, right? Modest man would never agree with that.
As
we'll find out soon enough if you've been nominated for any awards, right?
We will find out
soon
enough.
It is award season.
All right, gentlemen. We have a big race coming up in less than 2 weeks now. A couple big races, Department of Public Instruction, superintendent, but we're going to talk about the state Supreme Court. If you watch TV at all or listen to the radio, the ads are crazy. With less than 2 weeks to go, Bill McCosh, what do we need to know about this race from your perspective?
So Elon Musk's group, who I'm sure my friend Joe is going to talk about here, released a poll yesterday that showed Crawford up 5, but the surprising part of it was the poll said that Schimmel was actually down 13 just 2 weeks ago. I don't think that he was down 13 2 weeks ago.
I don't even think he's down 5.
I don't think he's down 5 now. I think it's a margin of error race, and I don't think either one is at 50, which means jump ball in this final 12 days. And who can draw the contrast? What I've said for some time now is I think it was time for Schimmel for sure to move off what I call the Willie Horton ads. She's soft on crime. She's letting out predators and criminals, blah, blah, blah. I think between the two of them, those ads have canceled themselves out, and voters can't quite distinguish who's softer on crime.
Where should they be going?
So Schimmel today moved to culture issues, and I think that's going to be a strong close for him to make sure the Republicans understand who he is and what he believes in and versus her and what she believes in. For him, Crawford, and I'll let Joe speak to this, she's trying to say he's corrupt. I don't see that as being an effective close. People that know Brad Schimmel, first as a prosecutor, then as state's attorney general, now as a judge.
Bottom line, he's not corrupt. I know Brad Schimmel.
He's not corrupt. So we'll see if the shift to the culture war is enough to sort of close this tiny gap at the end. WMC, again, had a poll out last week that had it tied. I'm not sure it was tied at that point in time, but I think it is a margin of error race and could go either way.
Joseph Pecky.
That was a lot of numbers. I don't think any of them mean anything. Bill knows that a traditional spring electorate, Susan Crawford wins. Every degree towards a presidential electorate gets better for Brad Schimmel.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to poll. It's really hard to poll anyways. But basically this comes down to, can Elon Musk, with his millions, get MAGA voters who have never voted in a spring election out or not? That's the ball game.
Early voting is up,
but it depends on who's voting.
Waukesha County's up.
So we could spend all hour on that. There are two things that happened this week that I think are worth pointing out in this race. The first was on a different inferior radio product. Brad Schimmel went down the big lie rabbit hole again and is already sowing distrust based on how Milwaukee reports their ballots. He's on the Eric Hovde train. You've been calling Eric Hovde a loser, and wouldn't you know it, big lie Brad out here being like, well, of course I'll accept the results of the election, so long as there's no funny business, so long as there's no late-night ballot dumps in Milwaukee. There's going to be late-night release of numbers because Republicans in the legislature refuse to do the thing that all three of us agree should be done.
Should have been done a long time ago.
So that's nonsense from Mr. Schimmel. And, like, he knows better. I disagree with him. I think he's wrong on a lot of things, but he's not a stupid guy. He knows exactly what he's doing, and it's ridiculous, and it should be called out. The second thing that should be called out, Bill and Steve and I have been reading the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for a long time. We know how active the editorial board used to be and how reluctant they have become to weigh in on races. They came out this week with a righteous, scathing editorial about the conduct of Elon Musk. His group is setting up fake organizations and ascribing positions to Susan Crawford that she has never said anything about or ruled on publicly. He is disguising these as from progressive groups and targeting them to conservative voters to try and make people hate her more. We have free speech in this country, but that move is vile and disgusting.
Think about this during the break. Elon Musk, will he do literally anything when it comes to these ads or his efforts on behalf of a candidates or candidates to win a race?
Yes.
Joseph, don't answer yet.
I don't have to think about it.
That was a tease. I blew a tease.
We're sticking with the Supreme Court in the next segment.
Yes. Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, Steve Scafidi on the Friday Origin Story edition of the Political Power Hour, 620 WTMJ. All right, anybody who listens to the show knows, first of all, Fridays, Bill McCosh and Joe Zepecki, the experts from both sides of the political aisle, and we pride ourselves on doing that on this program and on this station. All right, everybody knows I'm not a fan of Elon Musk. I've said it a billion times, and I've defended that belief many, many times. But I'm curious what you guys think. Elon Musk, I know, Bill, you're a fan of Elon. Is that correct?
I'm impressed with Elon
fanboy.
Musk. Yeah.
Number one fanboy.
Joe raised the issue in our first segment about some of the things he says. Ads that he's paying for that are not controlled by the candidates. We should make people aware of that fact. Saying things that, frankly, aren't true. And this is where I get crazy, because I understand that there's a separation between the candidates, their campaign, and these outside interest ads. But shouldn't we be about telling the truth in politics? Because last time I checked, and I say this all the time on Twitter, not X, lying about politics is still lying.
We should. I got to be honest. I don't know what to do about this. It's right, because the free speech rights of Americans are fundamental, and our politics has gotten to a place where there's almost no penalty for just outright making stuff up. And I don't know how you reconcile those two things. But one of the things that has become clearer to me is that the choice made by people like Donald Trump and Elon Musk is there's no cost to this. So why not do it? And the worst outcome for them is people don't believe that ad and it doesn't work. What does it matter? They've still eroded trust, and they've already lost trust. So they almost don't care. Like, it's freeing in a way. And we were texting about this. We probably don't have time for a full segment on it. Like, there was some reporting last night from the New York Times that Elon Musk was going to get a top secret briefing on war plans for China.
New York Times is still defending that story.
And none of us know whether that's going to happen or not, or whether it was going to happen. But what we know is the New York Times has journalistic standards. They have editors who, when reporters come and say, like, they have to, who did you talk to? Like, clearly there were people inside the Pentagon who believed this was going to happen. Multiple people independent of one another. That's how journalism standards work. And they report it. Then the Trump administration comes out and says, this is fake. And then we're left going, well, who do
Trump himself.
And then we're left going, who do we believe? And what we know is that Donald Trump has lied over and over again to the American people. And trust is like your virginity. Once you lose it, you don't get it back. And I don't actually have a take on this. It's just a really tough spot for all of us to be in when the government, the head of the government, appears to not care whether we trust him or not. And then you have media outlets who have journalistic standards,
maybe,
but do not bat 1,000. And there are things they've gotten wrong. And some people will believe the New York Times. Other people will believe the Trump administration.
So
this is a dangerous place.
Here's where I think we're at. And to get right to it, whether it's J.B. Pritzker or George Soros or Reid Hoffman on the one side, the left, or Musk on the right, they have an outsized influence in today's politics, particularly in Wisconsin. There's ample evidence of that. But on the notion, you know, who's calling balls and strikes? Who's the referee? There used to be editorials mattered. And I'm sorry if there's reporters listening, but the truth is nobody cares what an editorial says anymore. It doesn't have the influence it once did. If you got the Sunday editorial in the Milwaukee Journal or the Journal Sentinel when it merged, that used to be a very big deal. They don't even do editorials anymore.
Which is why this one was so rare.
Right?
It was unusual.
And nobody paid attention. I didn't even see that.
What do we think the truth of the story is?
On which part?
On Hegseth. Having access.
I don't believe that's accurate.
Musk is going to get briefed
on any foreign affairs thing. Right. My understanding is they're actually having a press conference either at DOD or in the White House today to talk about DOJ's efforts with DOD.
That was reported this morning. Yeah.
As it relates to this New York Times thing, I think we're seeing sort of generations now of stories out there with unnamed sources, right? And these could very well be anti-Trumpers who think they know something. They're leaking it to the New York Times. They have no proof of it. New York Times is using them because they've been in the agency for 20 years or more. And somehow it becomes a real story.
Well, you're not saying unnamed sources should never be used because that's Watergate at some point.
I'm saying I'd prefer they not be used. If they're the sole source of a story,
that's not realistic. I mean, otherwise you wouldn't get the information you'd get as a reporter.
But
I think
that's where we're moving towards. These stories won't be believable until people put their names behind them.
We're going deep in the weeds here, so let's just go for it. Bill will agree with me on this. Historically, there's been an expectation that if four sources is what they said, come to New York Times and say, this is happening. And then the New York Times goes, okay, we have it. We're going to write it. They go to the Trump administration. They go to the White House and say, this is what we have. What's your response? And it is not uncommon for a White House or a governor's office to say, we're not going to respond to that. And then when the reporting comes out, to now come out and say, it's not happening. Why didn't they just say it wasn't happening when the New York Times approached them in the first place?
Yeah, I didn't read the original story, so I don't know if they were approached. But what I told you guys on text this morning is I think one of the biggest upgrades of Trump 2.0 is their rapid response system. When stories like Hegseth is taking, you know, references to Colin Powell and any female senior, people buried at Arlington out, that was false. And Hegseth himself responded. On this one, Trump himself responded. We didn't see that in Trump 1.0. We do see it in Trump 2.0. So the playing field is level. I think the three of us agree on transparency. We want as much transparency as possible. If they can prove that story without those sources, have at it.
Should Musk have unfettered, unrestricted access to all private data that the U.S. government, federal government has?
No.
Yes. He should, as it relates, and here's why. Whether it's Social Security, public benefits, or taxes, how would you know if a fraud's going on if you can't do a Social Security number match plus a name? There might be people who are more than 100 years old, and that's already been widely reported that exists. How can you find out who those people are if you don't get access to their Social Security numbers?
I understand what you're saying, but also understand the Republican conservative position for years has been our data, our personal information is private and not just being able to access by anybody.
And how is anyone of our or our listeners' personal data going to be impacted by that? If we're all following the rules.
But it's not just Musk. It's all these young tech bros who are also unvetted, who have access nobody should have, especially at that young age. Unchecked? No, I'm not signing up for that.
Yeah, this is where we disagree. I think they have to have access to that. If you want to weed out waste, fraud, and abuse, you have to have access to Social Security numbers.
The Republican Party is not what it used to be.
Well, because they clearly used on to, that issue.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't get it. I mean, again, I understand the love affair on Trump, and he won the election. But the love affair with Elon Musk, because he's rich, I don't get. Quick break. McCashin, Sepecki, Friday edition, Political Power Hour, 620 WTMJ. Couple minutes before the bottom of the hour news with the always outstanding Connie Weber and, of course, the latest from ABC, Bill McCashin. You and I think, have the same opinion on Governor Tim Walz. I don't hate the guy, but he's in Wisconsin a lot. Like, stay on your side of the border, for Pete's sake.
He was in Eau Claire on Wednesday night, packed the place, the Pablo Center. He had, yeah, you know, 800 or 900 people there.
He sure loves Wisconsin a lot.
The thing about Walz that I find sort of humorous, this at least this week, I found him humorous through the whole campaign because I couldn't believe that Harris picked him. He said, as it relates to Tesla stock, that he gets up in the morning to see how much the Tesla stock has dropped and that gets him going for the day. The stupidity of that statement is astronomical when you consider that the state of Minnesota retirement fund has 1.6 million shares of Tesla stock.
Yes! Come on, dude! What are you talking about?
So you're betting against, you're rooting against your retirees by making a stupid statement like
Do you think he knew that when he first started saying that?
I don't think so either. I don't think he did.
Not that you should know every deal.
Yeah, remember, this is a guy that doesn't own any assets. Yeah, we found that out during the presidential race.
But you might want to fact-check that before you start...
But he is a member of the Minnesota retirement system, so he may want to think before you say crazy statements like that. And then he went on with Gavin Newsom and talked about he would, you know, WWE wrestle, you know, any Trump supporter and beat them. I mean, this guy's a clown. You guys can have him. I don't care if he comes to Wisconsin.
I don't want him.
Not you. You. He can come as much as he wants to. It's not going to impact our Supreme Court race or give him any better chance in 2028.
Counterpoint, Joseph Becky.
Do you hear yourself?
I do.
We can hear.
When you think about the nonsense that Donald Trump talks about, the way he goes after people, and that's all okay with you.
I never said it was okay.
But Tim Walz making a joke about Tesla stock.
It wasn't a
joke. At the expense of the least popular person in America. It's just like, okay, whatever. But like, it's pretty transparent that you only find personal attacks and stupidity from Tim Walz offensive, but not from J.D. Vance or Donald Trump.
Is Tim Walz doing the job that maybe Governor Tony Evers should be doing for Democrats and his candidates?
Which is what?
Promoting his side of the political aisle. Democratic governor.
No, here's the thing that I think Governor Evers should be applauded for, which is he's staying out of the court race.
Well, why doesn't Tim Walz stay out of it then?
Because Tony Evers will have business before the Wisconsin State Supreme Court.
He will.
Plenty
of it.
Tony Evers is playing by the rules and the norms, and we should recognize that. Tim Walz, he's not going to have business before the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. He can come and say whatever the heck he wants.
Real quick before the break. Should he have picked, or she have picked, Shapiro for vice president?
I don't think it would have made a difference.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it would have made a difference.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I don't know that it would have been enough to win, but he would have been a far bigger upgrade than Walz.
I think what they should have done was not put Tim Walz in the basement, which is kind of what they did.
I think less Tim Walz would have been.
Oh, yeah. That's revisionist history.
Come on.
The 3 weeks he had.
He
was better when he was auditioning for VP. He was incredible. He had Democrats fired up. He was reaching out to, you know, men.
All right, we got to get to this year.
Could also fix a truck. And then they stuck him in the basement.
For those who keep track, I agreed with Bill on this one. All right, local news. Thank you for listening to Friday Edition, the origin story of the political power hour, 620 WTMJ, Steve's Graffiti, Bill McCosh, and Joseph Pecky, left and right, Joe on the left, Bill on the right.
Should we explain that lead-in music just there? I think it's because producer Jaslyn is now wearing a Janesville Jets hat.
I think you're right on that. Wonder where that came from. And looking damn good in it. Wearing it proudly.
Benny and the Jets.
All right. Perfect. Bump in. All right, so I said this on Twitter this morning. I am sort of on Twitter, but I don't engage anymore. I just pronounce. I play by my own rules because I don't like Elon Musk. All right. The question is this. There's always been courts and lawsuits and judges, and especially after 2020, the aftermath, we all, you know, got to learn a lot about how the system works and what makes sense and what doesn't. I'm of the opinion, and I've talked to my legal scholars about this for weeks and months, that we are now in this era of constant lawsuits, especially related to the actions of the president and DOGE and funding cuts and agency cuts. I guess from my question, I'll start with you, Bill, is do you think many of the things that Trump is trying to accomplish, noble design, right, get efficient, cut cost of government, top-heavy government, all that stuff. I get that part of it. But the way they're doing it, do you think these things survive the courts? Because I'm not sure that that's the case.
I do think they survive. My big beef this week is with the assumed power of the district courts. And the one case in particular was sending TDA, Trende Aragua, gang members back to Venezuela, and a district court got involved. By the way, Trump had invoked the Alien Enemies Act prior to that, which gave him, I learned a new word this week. Joe is our vocabulary guy. It's non-judiciable, which means the courts have no role in this under any set of circumstances, not just the district court, but the Supreme Court has no role in this. The president has full authority.
That is written.
It is written in a 1948 Supreme Court decision that the Alien Enemies Act gives the president's sole authority to do this, and it is not judiciable. So that case, a lot of folks on the left lost their mind because they refused to turn the flight around. That judge had no authority to be involved in that case, period. So here's my point. The Supreme Court's going to have to move a little faster on what the true role of the courts is. I'm all for separation of powers. And if Trump and his team are exceeding their authority in certain ways, then the Supreme Court should say that. Five members of the Supreme Court should say that. But just ignoring these things and letting, I mean, just so the listeners know, in the entire 20th century, there were 30 national TROs, temporary restraining orders or injunctions, 30. Trump in his first term had 67. He's at least 30 already in the first 100 days of this term. So I think the court has the lower courts have gotten far ahead of themselves trying to be activist judges. The Supreme Court is the final arbiter of these things. It's time for them to step in. And whatever they say, Trump lived by that in the first term. He'll live by it this term.
He will live by it?
I believe he will.
But he isn't so far. And there's a lot in there. Okay. So I believe it is a concerted strategy. If you actually talk to Stephen Miller, they would tell you that Project 2025 in the blueprint was to push the bounds of what is written to try to exert maximum authority. That is a strategy.
We're in agreement on that.
That they know is going to end up in court. So I don't think it's fair to be like courts are getting out over their skis and putting all these TROs on when it is like by design they are trying to test the outer limits of the law. They knew this was going to happen. We still have due process in this country. I don't want gang members from Venezuela running on our streets. I don't. And there are credible people swearing out affidavits saying that they made mistakes. There were people on those flights who are now in like the equivalent of supermax prisons in Venezuela run by like warlords. I mean, it's like crazy how ridiculous these prisons are that had nothing to do with gangs either in America or in Venezuela. And including someone who like they were flown over the weekend. There was a hearing scheduled for Monday where they were going to present evidence that this one individual had nothing to do with the gang. And you cannot take away people's due process. And if you do, that invites a challenge. Where this goes, in addition to like the legal questions, which need to be figured out in a court of law, is you have, from the president on down, Elon Musk and everyone else, now attacking this judge, calling him a rogue judge, calling for his impeachment, getting slapped down by John Roberts. And Trump, who has the biggest megaphone in the world, can go out there and say, this judge is crazy, he doesn't like me, he hates me. And way more people hear that than know the truth, which is this district court judge, this chief judge, has sided with Trump multiple times over the last 10 years, including on stuff Trump really cared about.
The legal point that matters here, yes, the Enemies Act was declared by the president, but there's only a few situations where that can legally apply, and that's the legal
question.
We're not
in a declared war.
And that's one of them. So that's part of the legal aspects of this case. We've got to get to break. Rogers Love, Sapecki Makashin, next.
Now, it's time for Love and Rogers on the Political Power Hour.
Airs it out. Complete.
What makes you wanting more?
We got to find a way to go win.
And what makes you want to tear your hair out?
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh, it's always a good question. What do you love? What do you hate? Rogers Love. We mix in some football sound there. I love that. All right, who's going first?
I'm
going
to love Wisconsin Badgers basketball.
Nice win
yesterday. Well, making it to the finals of the Big Ten tournament when they were projected to be 14th in the conference. They lost some very big pieces last spring in Chucky Hepburn and A.J. Storr. Guys like me were a little bit worried about the future of the program. Old Greg Gard goes to the portal and finds guys that are even better. Mm. John Tonjay is now a second-team All-American. I think it helps with recruiting. Bucky won yesterday. I think they're in good shape on Saturday, and we'll finally get the rest they need for the Sweet 16.
If only could fix that football program.
Keep on dancing. I am loving Republicans who are willing to use their voice and not compromise their integrity. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski, quote, "I'm not going to compromise my own integrity by hiding from my words when I feel they need to be spoken. I'm going to take the criticism that comes. And it may be that Elon Musk decides he's going to take the next $1 billion he makes off Starlink and put it directly against me. That's why you've got everybody just like zip-lipped, not saying a word, because they're afraid they're going to be taken down. They're going to be primary. They're going to be given names in the media. You know what? We cannot be cowed into not speaking up," end quote. Thank you, Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski, for speaking your mind.
All right, so Love Fest. What do you hate?
Well, I am hating the lack of debates in the two statewide races. We had one true debate hosted by WISN, Matt Smith, Jaron Jones in the Supreme Court race. That was it. It was 1 hour long. In the DPI race, we finally had a virtual, I would call it a joint appearance more than a debate. hosted here in Milwaukee on Wednesday night. It actually was quite well done by Miss Kinzer, Brittany Kinzer, who's running against incumbent Jill Underle. But the fact that, again, back to the press thing, Joe, the press used to would have called BS on this. They would have said, we need more debates and been a stronger player in this. The fact that all four of these campaigns can get away with one debate or no debates is really sad for voters.
And let the record show that Brittany Kinzer was on my Monday program, and both candidates for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, Brad Schimmel and Susan Crawford, on my Wednesday program. Extended interviews available on our podcast page. And an offer to Jill Underle was also made, not accepted. Joe.
We've got an update to an earlier story we talked about.
Breaking news.
And I still hate it. liberal rag, the Wall Street Journal.
Ooh.
Musk is receiving the briefing because he asked for one. He has a security clearance, but isn't in the military chain of command or a military advisor to Trump.
There we go.
And you can dunk on the New York Times all you want.
Yeah, they're confirming that appearance.
The Wall Street Journal is no liberal rag. It sounds like this was certainly going to happen, even if it didn't. And this is way too much authority to be giving to a South African billionaire. I think so.
The good news is Donald Trump is the most accessible president in any of our lifetimes, and he'll get asked about this. Let's see what he has to say later this morning.
By what standard?
Accessible.
Accessible.
Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, they've done a good job with that.
Almost every day, I get all the White House communications.
Yeah. It's the number one email I get. And yeah. I get like dozens of them every day.
He'll be asked about it today. Let's see what he has to say.
But he also thinks his son is a tech genius because he can turn on a laptop computer.
That was funny.
So sometimes what you hear out of this accessible president is just nonsense.
Yeah. His son, Barron, who will be running for president in the 2040s.
We'll see.
It here first. Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, grab bag after this on 620 WTMJ.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
All right, Joseph Pecky, you're first up, and then you got to get out of here. You got a flight to catch or something.
I do. J.D. Vance's favorability is worse than Kamala Harris's at the 2-month mark, and perhaps it is possible. They're saying perhaps worse than any new vice president in the history of polling. And watch this space. We didn't talk about it today, but Social Security is going to be a thing. Trump administration is closing offices while simultaneously requiring more Social Security recipients to go in person to re-prove their identity. This could be a real political loser for the Trump administration.
That is a loser. And do you endorse the fat shaming that's going on with the vice president? Because there's a lot of that going on social media. It's like, what's that about exactly?
I literally haven't seen any of it.
Really?
And I would never do that. Huh. I think it's fair game to make fun of his makeup. I think it's fair game to make fun of Donald Trump's makeup. If you want to be manly men, don't wear makeup.
Yeah, with this administration, more hair and makeup than any previous administration.
Have fun in Mexico.
All right,
quick shout out to my niece, Grace McCoshin. She plays for the Ohio State Buckeyes. Women's Frozen Four. They play Cornell today. Cornell's starting goaltender is a young lady by the name of Annalise Bergman, who is the only female to ever play in a boys' junior hockey game. And she played for who? The Janesville Jets. We played her in Janesville. The place was packed with moms and daughters, and they all stood in line to get Annalise's autograph after. So good luck to Annalise and my niece, Grace. Here's my close. If you're looking for who law enforcement's choice is in the Supreme Court race,
Pretty obvious.
Look no further than yesterday the Wisconsin Professional Police Association endorsed Brad Schimmel. They're a 10,000-member statewide organization who tends to lean left, by the way. They endorsed Brad Schimmel. Brad Schimmel also has 54 of the 72 current sheriffs in our great state of Wisconsin, so he is law enforcement's choice. Don't listen to the noise on the air about sentencing. Another top host in Milwaukee put out, retweeted something this morning. It's a story from the Journal Sentinel that showed Brad Schimmel's sentences for sexual predators and overall are much stronger than Susan Crawford. Brad Schimmel is law enforcement's choice.
I think that's right. I mean, we had both candidates on the program Wednesday. And look, he is a law and order guy, rule of law guy. I've had countless conversations with him on the air and off. He's somebody I think that represents that. And I think if you read anything out of the Trump election, America and Americans' voters, including those in Wisconsin, are looking for that sort of return to normalcy.
Yeah.
This is the law. You will follow it. And if you don't, there's going to be consequences. I think that's sort of what Brad Schimmel represents.
No question. That his whole campaign's been about that. We'll see how the final 10 days go.
All right. So I know you're watching March Madness.
I am watching.
All right. So I know
Go Marquette today.
You're up on Marquette?
One son went to Madison. The other went to Marquette. So I'm a Badger. So the Badgers are still alive. I'm cheering for Marquette today.
Which team you think is better?
I think Wisconsin is. I think this Wisconsin team, when they're hitting their threes, could make it to the Final Four.
You can say the same thing about Marquette. They're both great shooting teams, but when they're not, boy, they just...
When they're ice cold, it's a different story. And that's sort of what happened to them the final 10 days of the season, where they lost a couple games they shouldn't have.
All right, since Joe bailed because he's going on vacation, we got a minute. Biggest story in politics next week. What do you think it's going to be?
Whether or not Donald Trump or J.D. Vance comes to Wisconsin. Joe and I talked about this on Upfront last Sunday. I think that will be the final signal to quote-unquote Trump voters. Remember, Trump got the most votes in Wisconsin history, 1.68 million in November. Not many of those folks, or not maybe half of those, will vote in the spring election. So it's incumbent upon the Schimmel campaign to let them know who the right candidate is. If Vance shows up here next week, I think it's more likely to be Vance than the president himself. That will be the signal. And they can say things that will get statewide attention that Brad Schimmel could never say.
He knows Republican politics better than anybody. Bill McCashin, Joe, wherever you are, thanks for being here. Don't forget, all of this show, all of these interviews, and all the things we've done this week and every week are available at WTMJ.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Go Marquette. Go UW Wisconsin. What was that hockey team again?
Ohio State.
Ohio State's women's side.
The Buckeyes.
All right. Have a great weekend. We'll get it going again Monday morning right here on 620 WTMJ. I'm sure you knew.